Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Voices of Women. I'm your host, Chris Stamos, and also the founder of Women of Wisdom. So we're having our 28th annual WOW Conference in Seattle, February 14th through the 16th. Our theme this year is Radiate Loving Harmony, Unite Our World. We have a lot of special guests this year, including the well-known author, Jean Shinoda Bowen. So you can see all our events at womenofwisdom.org. Just look for the 2020 conference links. Today I'm interviewing one of our workshop presenters, Jamie Starr. Jamie Starr is a mental health counselor, hypnotherapist, and high priestess. She helps empathic women move from self-sacrifice to self-love and embrace their divinity. She is the host of the podcast Empaths in Love and loves helping women manifest their magic. She has been presenting rituals, workshops, and seminars, mostly in a Wiccan community, since 2003. Jamie presented several academic papers at the Pagan Studies Conference in 2005. She leads personal transformation intensives and therapist trainings through the world. Hear more about Jamie at her website, star.info. Jamie will be giving the conference on Reclaim Self-Love. So welcome, Jamie.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Great. So I'm hearing a little buzz. Are you on speakerphone or?
Oh, no. I'm on a rotary old school dial phone. Does it sound okay?
I'm just getting a little buzz, but I will just deal with it. I just thought I'd check. Okay. So you've been called self-goddess, self-love goddess. What exactly does that mean to you?
You know, I was doing a video with a friend where we were on Facebook Live and just talking about what we were up to, and she's like, you're like a self-love goddess, and it just kind of stuck from there that I see goddesses in every woman. You know, it was a couple of years ago when, I don't know if it was the last time you had Jean Bolen at Women of Wisdom, but I came to her talk and met with her, and I was really inspired about the way that we look at each other and the divinity that we see in each other. And her work really helped me to understand that we are all different kinds of gods and goddesses. And a lot of my work has been centered around helping folks connect with that through self-love, which sounds really easy, but actually it's pretty hard to do. That there's some learning about ourselves and some unlearning of patterns we have to do. So self-love to me is the way to get to the divine in you. And it's my life's mission to do that, so I'm called the self-love goddess.
Okay, great. Well, we all need a little more self-love. You say it sounds easy, but it isn't always so easy to do. But how did self-love change your own pilgrimage?
Yeah, I was recently on pilgrimage in Greece. In fact, I just got back last night and rolled in, so I'm not sure what time it is, but here I am. You know, I think before I started doing hypnotherapy and shadow work and really doing this intense kind of ritual experiences with archetypes, I thought love was about relating to other people and that self-love was just liking yourself. Well, self-love also means doing things that you would do for your child, even if they don't want it. My son is 3. And he loves ice cream and would eat it every day. And if he had his way, he would. But real love for him means telling him, no, that's enough. You don't need ice cream every day. Have a vegetable. And so self-love has that kind of, there is a hardness to it or a limit that love really means having limits also. And not just allowing people to walk all over us or do whatever they want just because they love us or we love them. And it's not about doing whatever you want, but doing what's in your highest good. And when I was on pilgrimage in Greece a few years ago, I would have just been with my group and done whatever they wanted. And this time I was really honest about how I was feeling and the things that I wanted. And could still be flexible with the group without, like, talking behind people's back or putting my own needs last. I don't know if you've been traveling, but you know that, like, you know, a lot of things can happen when you're traveling. And one of the things that happened to us is we got lost on our way to Delphi, because I wanted to see where the priestesses would inhale the vapors and speak the prophecies of Apollo, and she did this for like 2,000 years. And by the time we got there, the site was closed, because they close early in the winter. And I was just devastated, because we'd come all this way and it was right there. And I had no qualms about crying in front of all these people and just being like, I'm so disappointed that we got here and it was closed. Because that was the truth of the situation. Now, we ended up adjusting our trip later and coming back to Delphi, so I was able to visit the site and have more time. And it turned out it was a better day. There were far less people there the second time we arrived, and it ended up being better than I could have even planned. And I didn't have to blame anybody or feel guilty, and it was just a big relief. Yeah, definitely different than how I would have done it before I started doing this work.
Yes, well, and that's so true of travel. You just have to go with the flow. Things don't always work out. I just came back from a trip myself and was with a group, and it was fabulous. But that's a great example of just knowing everything will work out perfectly in divine order, and you have to kind of do some trusting and or letting go. I mean, you might have had to just let go. Okay, we're not going to see Delphi, but it certainly worked out for you. That's great. So
yeah, we were pretty lucky.
Yes. And it should not be a better day, so it was perfect. So let's talk a little more about, you shared a little bit of how you came to work with the goddess, but is there anything more? I think there's more depth than that. You started, it's great that there's a link with Jane Boland, who's coming this year to the conference, and you're going to be here as well. But I know you've been on quite a journey with working with the goddess, so let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so go set your way back machine. I was in high school. And I don't think I've told you this story before, but I had a friend who had taken her own life in high school. And I felt really bad about it, and I was, like, kind of depressed and didn't know who to talk to. And I was I didn't grow up religious, but I was a very religious person. Like, I really wanted God, and I read a lot in the Bible, and I had family that was Mormon. So, like, these were, like, the stories that I was hearing. And then I had an experience where I saw my dead friend, and she was talking to me and telling me that things were okay and she was fine where she was, and, you know, that it wasn't my fault, and I just felt so relieved. And then I was like, I need a container for this experience. And I didn't find it in the churches I was checking out. And a friend of mine was interested in paganism and Wicca, and she's like, have you heard about this? And so we started reading some books together, and that kind of started it on the path for me, as I was looking for a religion that would contain the experience that I had with my friend, because it was so powerful and transformative. And I ended up, one of the common early ceremonies you do as a wee Wiccan, as a little Wiccan, is the drawing down the moon ceremony, where you bring the full moon goddess into your body and you speak her words, the charge of the goddess. And I had done that, and just I felt so moved. And I love seeing, like, women in art and in, like, reflected in these, like, Greek tragedies and these mythologies, and, like, okay, there's divinity in men and women. This isn't just for old bearded men, that there's goddesses that are shaped like me and that sound like me and that are young and old and have all kinds of roles in society, and that just really excited me. And so, I studied with a Wiccan coven and became a priestess in a Wiccan lineage, and now I've expanded that into my psychology practice, working with archetypes and understanding, like, how they work, and really bringing that mythopoetic, that world is divine and we're in it, and these stories are unfolding in us, and there's gods and goddesses in every person. Yeah, that's just been really exciting to me.
A good journey. And then good you found a place to learn about yourself and find a spiritual path and that worked for you, especially in a time. It can be very traumatic as a teenager to lose a friend like that. And, I here at Woman of Wisdom, we serve a large umbrella and embrace all religions. It's more of a spiritual path, whatever your path is. And a lot of people relate to the pagan or Wiccan. And I just really want people to be aware of that we don't necessarily talk religion. We talk about spirituality and mind, body, spirit growth and all that. So now you talked about the goddess, but you also are working. Yeah, I know in the Wiccan community there's a lot about talk about the priestess. And what does that mean for you?
I love the word priestess, and it's so powerful. And it's one of those things that, like, you kind of have a calling to it, that there's something about walking your life with a spiritual view, that the world is unfolding, like you said, according to a divine plan, and that it's happening for me, not to me, and that the if we have deities we believe in or spiritual forces, that they are alive and they're working in our world and in our consciousness and in our universe in a really powerful way. And a priestess mediates that for herself and also for other people. That's what the high priestess means, is that she works on behalf of other people to create a container where people can touch the divine, that they can touch their own spiritual experience and understand their place in the grand cosmic order and see themselves as divine. And so there's a skill set associated with it that anybody could learn. And just like anything else, there's an art to it, and there's some science behind it. There's some psychology. And I think that we associate priests with, like, the organization of a church. But there's something around priestess that's much freer than that, because it was never part of the kind of churches that maybe we grew up in or experienced in our culture. And so priestess is sort of free from that, and that you can have divinity anytime, and that a priestess facilitates that engagement or that interaction. And it used to be I would go to rituals and the priestess would, like, do the work. And now when people come to my office for psychotherapy, I'm still a priestess. I'm helping them tend to their experience of the world and their emotional reaction to it. It's really powerful work.
I was going to ask you how you blend this with your work, you know, as here you in Wiccan community, a priestess, and then you're also a mental health counselor, which is very mainstream-like, and how you blend those two together. Because a lot of times people have problems bringing the spirituality to their work.
Exactly. And I remember when I was going to therapy and I had to, like, explain sort of what these energies, like, meant to me, and how I think I was working with Aphrodite at the time and my work with her, and that I wasn't crazy because I was hearing voices and really I was being prayerful and things like that. And I had to do a lot of education. So when I became a mental health counselor, I'm like, okay, I'm not doing that to people. You know, that we all have a capacity for spiritual engagement. It's part of how our brain is wired, and it's another resource for mental health. And so I work with people to help them find that. And so as a priestess in a Wiccan ritual, I would be doing, you know, Wiccan things. I would facilitate a drawing down the moon. As a priestess in a mental health counselor role, my job is to help people find their own divinity and find their own spiritual connection and draw that forward with a respect for how important and how transformative it is. So it's whole person psychology, including the spiritual, because I believe that, and there's evidence of, that is natural, that there's brain states and trances that we can connect to that are also healthy. And working with images, not just words, and sensation, not just memories, right? So we're expanding our container for where healing can take place. And so bringing that priestess aspect in, it's facilitating someone for their own divine connection. And the hypnotherapy is a great means of that, because we have sort of a standardized way of doing, say, soul retrieval. I've lost a memory or a part of myself. Well, let's go get it. We have a protocol for that. Or you want healing for something that happened a long time ago. Well, great. We'll use your mind and go back in time, and we'll find some healing there or some resolution. And being in the moment is more powerful than talking about the moment, because your mind doesn't know the difference. So we use the psychology of what we know to be true about the human brain in order to facilitate the transformation of the spirit, because that is what mental health is. Psychotherapist means a servant to the psyche, to the soul. So I'm taking it back old school.
Yeah, that's great. Yes, and there, it is all about healing. I mean, and that you can facilitate and help, and it's about the person doing their own work for their healing, but you're facilitating, you're guiding them. Now, you mentioned, and I'm just curious because our audience may not know, when you say drawing down the moon, what does that mean?
Oh, yes. It's a beautiful ritual where you go into a meditative state, a receptive state, and you invite the energy of the full moon into your body. I like to imagine that inside of me is a room in which I receive people. And because it's in my mind, I can put whatever I want to in it. And so I would put things that would invite in the feminine energy of the moon. So I might place some mirrors or a bowl of water or, I don't know, some cookies, because that sounds nice. Wouldn't you like to be received with cookies? And make this receptive place in my heart, in my mind, in my body, to experience the energy of the moon. And as we reach up in our imagination, it is so, really, because we're powerful beings. So when we reach to spirit, it reaches back to us and longs to touch us. And just allowing the space for what would happen, the curiosity, what would happen if I brought that into my body? And then in that particular ceremony, when you're filled up with the moon's feminine energy, you speak the charges goddess, which is a piece of liturgy. It's either a poem or a spoken word, non-rhyming poem, written by Doreen Valiente in like 1950-something, 57 or something, pretty early. And you speak it, and it's like considered alive and divinely inspired, and that the charge is telling you, like, this is who the goddess is, so that you could see her in yourself, and you're speaking it as if it's true about you, and so you start to take it on. You're creating a liminal space where all time is happening, past, present, and future is happening right now in my body, and I'm making potential, and all of these things are true. And they're not true, and they were true, and they will be true. And, yeah, it's a beautiful space for that. You
mm-hmm.
can actually Google it. You could read the charge. It's freely available
uh-huh.
online. There's something really magical about either speaking it out loud to yourself under the full moon or having it spoken at you, like in a ritual, because it seems like when the priestess is speaking it, it's like parts of it are directed at right at you, and you hear it differently every time, and however it comes out of her mouth is correct. So even if she gets wildly off, it's considered divinely inspired, like the words of the goddess are coming out of her mouth, and I swear she looks in your eyes and you're like, how did you know that I needed to hear that? Because the world is conspiring to teach us, and that's, it's a liminal opportunity for that. Yeah, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I imagine the priestesses are very much working on their intuition, and you know, things naturally come forward that you always hear what you need to hear. So your workshop is on Reclaim Self-Love, and so
yeah.
Let's talk about that. And you have a method of assessing self-love.
Yeah, I've been putting this together. I'm really excited to share it. So in the, I don't know, I guess it's happiness psychology. There's the work of Maslow, and he has the hierarchy of needs, which when he originally conceived of it was five levels that you needed to do in order to experience what he called peak experiences or self-actualization. And the idea is that, like, if you want to have a peak experience and manifest what you want in your life, then you need to have basic things like enough sleep, enough to eat, a good family, that there's basic things that you need in order to build up to have that. And so they've gone further. Other psychologists have taken his work further, and now there's seven or eight levels on a pyramid. And so I've been using that to talk about, to look at, like, where in my life am I missing something? If you imagine that the levels he has are like the levels of a pyramid, and that you have bricks, and the first level is physiology, like, what's my body doing? And you're in poor health, then you are not going to have as powerful a peak experience as somebody who has great health, because you just don't have enough in you. Your energy is diverted trying to survive, so we can't appreciate beauty or manifest the things that we want to when we're worried about day-to-day things like having enough to eat or money to survive. And so I think of them as like little bricks. That, am I getting enough sleep? Okay, that's one brick. Well, I'm only getting 5 hours. Well, that's not complete. That's not enough. You need to have more to be healthy. And that you add up all these little bricks, and you can kind of get a sense of where you're healthy and where you need to put some more work in. And it also gives you some clues about how to build up more of what you want. So if you want more relationships, if you want to have more satisfying relationships, then you look at the levels under relationship, which includes things like safety. So if you're like, wow, I don't feel safe in my body or my community or my country, then of course I'm not going to feel safe in a relationship to relate to someone, say, without codependency or with an open heart, right? I'm not going to trust them because I don't trust the world around me. And so it shows us where to make intervention that's actually going to serve us instead of trying to figure out, like, the symptom. So we're getting, it's a method of getting underneath it. So at the workshop, we'll be doing that, and then I'll give you some tools to actually work with some of the areas that are harder to heal. So let's say if you didn't have a very good childhood, or you had a poor relationship with your mother, maybe that's a good example, then how do I fix that relationship with her and heal that wounded inner child part of me when I can't speak to my mother, or I don't want to, or I only want to do my work, I can't do her work, right? That certainly happens. And so I've got some tools and methods that we will apply to work on healing those wounded parts of ourselves and getting under the symptoms, right? Not just what's on the surface, but like, what's underneath that? What does it mean about me as a person? What does this wound say about me? And doing some corrective interventions. So we're going to have a transformational experience for sure, and reclaiming some lost parts and walking away with a plan for self-love that you'll actually use. So no one is going to walk away with, I'm going to drink more water and do more yoga, unless it's going to serve them to their next step, their next big thing. It's going to be really powerful and lovely, and we'll spend a lot of time connecting with each other, because I think we really need that. And that's why we come to Women of Wisdom, is to connect with each other. So I'm super excited to share that with everybody.
Yes, yeah, the connection is so important, and that definitely does happen at Women of Wisdom. So one of the things that I think about, why in particular women have a difficult time taking care of themselves.
I think women are, this is a big question, and, you know, me, like, at 20 would say, because the patriarchy is keeping us down and we need to band together as women and throw off the patriarchy. But what I understand now is that we want to take care of others, that we really value our relationships with other people, whether it's our children, our coworkers, our partners, that we want them to be well and be happy. And it feels like in order to do that, we have to put them first. And that's a natural inclination that I think many women have, and empaths in particular have, because we can feel their energy and we're sensitive to it, and we know that if they feel better, we'll feel better. We just know that because we're sensitive to it. And so we put them first, and that means that we put ourselves last. And so part of the work of self-love is understanding that when I put my real needs first, my needs as a wise, growing adult, not my childish ego needs first, when I put my wise adult needs first, then I have more energy to serve others. But also I honor their energy and what they're capable of. Toddlers are a great example of this. My son will not, for the life of me, let me put his shoes on, even though I can do it way faster than him, and if we're in a hurry, and I always want to, because he wants so badly to do it himself, even though he's not very good at it. And the loving thing for me to do is to allow him enough space to practice putting his shoes on at his own pace. It's not loving, really, for me to do it for him. And as a parent, I see that really clearly. But when I was younger, in my personal relationships, I wouldn't see that. I would say, oh, I need to do this for my partner. And I would say, it's because I love them. But actually, I was taking away their ability to do something themselves and to take care of their own needs or say what they wanted. And I ended up doing more for other people than even they wanted. But it took me a long time to see that. And sometimes women build an identity on taking care of other people. And so if you don't have that, then who are you? And that makes a big void and a big question, because we want to be of service to others. And so the self-love is both the cure and the thing that we think we don't need. Like, the thing that we first sacrifice is care for ourselves, because we want to care for other people. Yeah, it is a big question, and it takes some big paradigm shifts, I think. But also, we should approach it with compassion and with some understanding that the reason that we self-sacrifice that way is to serve and solve a problem, and that there are other ways to do that, even if they don't feel good. Right? Mm-hmm.
Well, it brings up questions of me, too, that it also involves control issues, can involve control issues of, mm-hmm. you know, taking care of other people, you're taking care of how you think they want to be taken care of, mm-hmm. And all that. And another thing that comes up when you're talking is about our boundaries, creating the boundaries, and, you know, creating that boundary for yourself, for self-love, and not jumping to rescue other people or people coming into your boundaries and knowing, you know, the whole thing of knowing when to say yes and no, which is about mm-hmm. self-care also.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. That's huge. And I think it's that codependency work, right? So one of the things I had struggled with is, you know, we know what a codependent relationship looks like. And if you come to my workshop, I'll show you. And maybe you've seen it before, but sometimes they call it the victim triangle or the codependent triangle, and somebody's a victim, and someone's a persecutor, and someone's a rescuer. Well, it feels really good to be the rescuer, and I know what my job is, and I know I'm being helpful, but what we know is that people that are rescued, the victim, they don't want to be rescued, and nobody wants to be the persecutor, but if you're going to be a rescuer or a victim, there has to be a persecutor. So we put people in these roles. And we'll talk in my workshop about the empowerment dynamic. Well, if I'm not rescuing, then, like, what can I do? What other roles can I have? And we talk about being the creator instead of the victim. Life doesn't happen to me. I happen to my life. This is for me. This is a teacher to me. I'm not a victim. This is a lesson. And I don't need a rescuer. I need advice. I need counsel so I can make my own decisions. And it's a way of shifting your perspective, but it also takes back your power. And in doing that, you actually give other people their power back. Because nobody wants to be the persecutor. Even bullies and people in prison and horrible, awful people don't actually want to be the villain, I think, for the most part. You know, that we all want to be loved. And that even in persecuting or in controlling, like, there's an attempt at love. And so when we know that, we can come at it with compassion and we can make that shift of, like, okay, this is happening on my behalf, and what can I do with this? And if I don't know, who can I ask? And that's a really different question than who's going to save me, or I need to fix this for you. How do I fix this for you? You know,
I talk to that a lot. You know, that fix it. I can am wanting that. You know, to give advice and fix it for people when they're not even asking for that. A lot of times, it's just they want to be. They just want to be. Share what they're feeling, but they won't. Don't jump in to try to fix it. It's up to them to fix it, and it's up to people to own their own power, like you said, to ask for help when they need it, and to claim their own right to figure out their own way through it themselves. So it's going to be a great workshop. I hope people can hear that from your talking about it. Just so you know, to come away with a self-care plan, to feel empowered, and I kind of feel like, you know, going to a deeper level of, it's not just lip service of, okay, self-care, I got to think of myself first. It's, you know, really going, searching inside yourself, well, what does that mean for you?
Right. I have some health problems. I have celiac. And so sometimes it's hard for me to absorb nutrition. And I used to think that taking an Epsom salt bath was, like, such a luxury, and, like, after I had my son, like, I stopped doing it because I barely had time to shower, let alone sit in the bath. But what I learned is that the essential oils and the Epsom salt had magnesium in it, which I wasn't absorbing naturally, and that I needed it for, like, overall health, like, basic overall health. So what I thought was this luxury that I could sacrifice is actually something really essential for me. And when I discovered that, I was like, oh my gosh, like, self-love is fundamental. It's not a luxury. This is not about spa days and doing facials. This is about giving your body what you need and taking care of yourself for real, as if you were your own, if you were the child and the parent. Like, what do I need the most? You know, what do I need badly? And that fun and pleasure and beauty is all a part of that, after we get the fundamentals down. Other than that, we're avoiding it, right? We don't want to avoid it. We want to embrace it. You had talked about watching other people and wanting to rescue them. And something I was thinking about was that our capacity to hold suffering and to witness that without fixing it, and how hard that is to feel helpless. But what a beautiful gift to be able to give to somebody. And that when your own cup is full, you can help fill other people's cup. And that you don't have to do anything. You can just be there for them. That is enough. That maybe rescuing them is overdoing it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that people, we don't know how to do that. It's like we're not taught how to just be. We got to jump in and do stuff. And it's about being, and being with another person is a beautiful thing. We're getting close to the end here, but I want to, you've been at Women of Wisdom before, so I'd love for you to share your experience of being a presenter, being a participant, perhaps how it differs from other places that you've been a presenter at.
Oh, yeah. Women of Wisdom is one of my favorite events that I've been a presenter at. I love the long workshops. They're like 3 hours, so you get to go deep in. It's not just a afternoon. Or, like, some of them, like, by the time you go around the circle and introduce yourself, there's no time for content. Every time I go, I learn something profound, and I have a serious internal shift. I went to one presentation about different kinds of intuition, and I'm like, I'm not really psychic. I don't have that. And I walked away, like, trusting my inner wisdom, like, trusting my inner gifts, which I'd never experienced before. meeting Jean Boleyn was amazing. And, oh, I met Wendy Rule there. I didn't know that. And she'll be here this time, too. It's like a great
yeah.
fit. I went to her presentation, and I did not know her, and just walked away totally in love with her work, and I've been following her ever since. She's a brilliant musician. She's very powerful when you listen to her music, and when you meet her in person, and she's, like, telling stories and leading us on meditations. Yeah, it was really, really powerful. And the community is so wonderful, and everyone's trying really hard to show up and be open and connect. And it's just one of the warmest conferences I've ever been to. I've been to a lot of conferences. Academic conferences are great, and you meet people and shake hands, but there's a sense of one-upmanship sometimes, like you have to prove that you're smarter than other people. And at Women of Wisdom, it's about, like, being present and showing up with your heart and asking, like, questions that may be really personal to you and related to the subject. And people are so gracious with their time and their energy. I love Women of Wisdom.
Yeah,
I think it's
very good.
Great service.
It reminds me of, I went to a conference in Victoria, and it was at a university, and they did an evening, they had a panel of people talking about the importance of stories, and they didn't tell one story. And I had to laugh, like, because that's what happens at Women of Wisdom. We tell stories, you know. It's an opportunity every workshop, and I know it'll happen in yours, where people can share their stories. And that's a true gift. When, even if and some people are shy and afraid to tell their story, but if they hear somebody else share their story, it empowers them even also to perhaps share, but also just to realize, oh, they're not alone. They can relate to that story. There's somebody else feeling like this, and that's empowering too. Well, one last thing. I would love for you to share perhaps what your thought on the theme is. I've been asking the presenters our theme, Radiate Loving Harmony, Unite Our World. And that seems to be, could be a part of your work of self-love for sure.
Absolutely. Oh boy, what a great question. Let me tune into my heart. I really believe that, and I've seen this just over and over, that harmony happens internally first, and that you have to take care of yourself. It's like put your own oxygen mask before you help even your child, right? And that we do need to help ourselves first and put ourselves first in a healthy way that includes the community, that includes our neighborhoods, our state, our nation, and our world. We live in a global place and a global time, and it's easier to see that now and to believe it. But we also are in these echo chambers where we hear and see people that are most like ourselves or what somebody wants us to see, right? So Facebook has an algorithm to show you more of the things that you like, and so you think that everybody agrees with you. Well, that's not the way our world works. Or if you watch the news, they have, like, a spin on it. They have their own perspective, and so they spin all the stories into that perspective. And that's not how things are. And as we find harmony in ourselves, we come to undo those things and lift those veils and have compassion and love for other people. And when we love ourselves, it's easy to love other people because we can say, oh, man, that would totally embarrass me, and then I would act that way. Or I'd be totally angry and scared. Boy, no wonder they're acting that way. And that I can have compassion for that because I know what it feels like to be embarrassed or angry or scared. These are all fundamental human things. And so harmony happens first at home when we experience more harmony in ourselves. And we do radiate outward. And at least I have control over that. Or I can come to have control over that. Because the world is a scary place, especially if you're sensitive. So let me start at home and harmonize myself so that I can radiate and experience that in the world.
Mm-hmm. So true. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today, Jamie.
I had a great time. Thank you, Chris, for inviting me.
Yes, so be sure, everyone, check out the website, womanwisdom.org. Jamie's workshop is Sunday morning. Check out all the events. There's you can attend Saturday, all day Saturday, and that includes Saturday night banquet with Jean Shinoda Boleyn as our speaker, or or you can go Sunday, or you can go both days and really indulge. And there are separate tickets for Wendy Rule's concert. Jamie mentioned Wendy Rule. She is fabulous. And that event is open to men. You can buy a ticket for Friday night. It all is at the UW Tower in the University District in Seattle. So check out the website, womenofwisdom.org. And you can also read more about Jamie at jamiestar.com. No, info. Jamie Star, J-A-M-I-E, star.info. Okay, well, I will be here all week interviewing more presenters at the Women of Wisdom Conference coming up soon, February 14th through the 16th. So bye for now.